There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Redmen TV. It is the build-up show, Liverpool Tottenham Hotspur, Sunday 4:30 kickoff. I am your host, Paul Machen. I am joined by Tom Dutton for this one, well, and Kelly, and by Jack Gill. I really struggled with Ben there. Jack Gill. We're off to a flyer of a start. I've took my braces out as well. I've got no excuse for not being able to talk. It's a weird game, this one, Tom. I want to talk a little bit about the rivalry in a bit, but it is a big game. You know, it's a very, very good team, regardless of how they started the season. Last time out, you know, we took all 3 points, but it took a Lloris, Toby Alderweireld incident to get all the points for us, ultimately. We've ridden our luck a few times already this season. We could really do with just winning this right.
Yeah, I mean, there's, like you say, when we ride our luck, if you come up a team that, look, Tottenham haven't started well, but they're still scoring goals. Mm-hmm. They've still got dangerous players up top in your Kane, your Son, your Lamella and stuff, and Lucas as well. If you give them a sniff, they will take it. They are top-class players, to be fair to them. And, yeah, we have scraped through at times. I mean, if it comes down to scraping through, I believe in this team, because we will get over the line some way to do it, but it is. It's a massive game. You're coming off the back of, look, both of us have come off Champions League and pretty much demolished the teams that we played. Yeah. Played some really good football, both teams. Coming out of that as a high, it's gonna be tasty.
This is a really, really tricky spell of fixtures we're entering here, Ben. You know, and it kicks off with this one, and it culminates in the Man City game, really. And I think the fact that Man City play before us again this weekend means they get the chance to close the gap, etc. We're back in this world all of a sudden. Putting that to one side for the moment, you know, I'd said, I think we did the Around the League show at the start of the week, and we talked briefly about this game, and I'd said I kind of wanted Spurs prior to their midweek game. I wanted them to beat Red Star, and I was quite happy for them to beat them well, because I think it actually played into our hands a little bit more, because I didn't want Spurs coming to us on a bounce of not having won in five games or whatever. Whereas they'll feel a bit more confident, they'll feel a bit more up for it, and I don't want them coming to Anfield and parking the bus is kind of what I'm
driving. They'll come a little bit more confident, but they probably still won't fancy themselves, which again I think plays into our hands a little bit, because that means that we will probably be able to control the game a little bit more. And I think from our perspective as well, you know, us doing the job in Belgium in midweek on the back of, like, if we're being honest, a pretty horrendous performance away at Man United, and where we basically shit out a draw, you know, to have the game in midweek, that benefits us as well to win comfortably there. So going into these games, you know, that at the end of the day, you know, they're a top six rival on paper, and these games are unpredictable. But I would fancy us here, you know, to kick on, really, given the fact that, you know, we played so well in the week.
Yeah. What's your feelings on this one, Jack? Because, you know, I feel like these stories of Tottenham's demise have been greatly exaggerated. Yeah. Really, we do this every single season where there's always going to be good teams that do struggle just to get up and running. And when they're not foot flat to the floor, as it were, from minute go, you depress the media and rival fans tend to like pounce on it a little bit. I think the idea that Spurs are rubbish all of a sudden is a big lie, to be honest.
Yeah, there's quite a few teams in the top six at the minute where you just can't tell whether it's going to be their day or not, and Tottenham fall into that category. You know, some days they can turn up and they can blow you away, play some really good football, and you can link them to us and City for pushing to the title. Obviously, Tottenham the last couple of years have been up there until the last few moments where they've dropped off. But to be honest, it's like you say, they're so hard to judge. Pochettino's so good tactically. We saw against City earlier on in the season where they basically put back to the wall, defended really well, managed to work well for them. They got a point despite not performing particularly well that day. So it's going to be a very tough game, and it's one of them like we'll talk about in a minute. But they aren't our rivals. They don't seem anything like rivals. But they're going to want revenge for the Champions League final.
The thing for me is, well, you speak about Champions League final. When we lost the Champions League final to Madrid, we seemed to kick on, and it seems the exact opposite for Spurs in terms of they seemed deflated, and there was a lot of talk about, because that was meant to be maybe a few players last hurrah going there, winning the Champions League and then moving on. And the manager
said if they won it, he was going to go.
Exactly. So what does that do mentally for the whole team? Thinking, okay, if my manager was going to go and then we lost it and we're not playing free-flowing football, it's not really clicking. You see Eriksen every time I watch him, just strolls around the pitch, doesn't care about pressing, doesn't want to do any of that. And it seems like they need a bit of just reinvigoration, and I don't know where they get that from.
I wonder whether that, because the Champions League stuff I think is really interesting, because you're right, I think Liverpool went there when we lost to Madrid, we went to Kiev, and I think we got a real, like, and look, it helps the way the game goes, which sounds really counterintuitive, but all the carrier stuff feeds into them, and the challenge. It feeds in, but it feeds into this notion that, like, on another day, with a different blow of the wind, you know, that kind of thing, the butterfly effect, things could have gone differently for us. We didn't feel inferior on the day in any way, shape, or form. You know, we had a massive show of strength from the fans beforehand, in the ground, and everything. We stood in every aspect. We felt like we stood toe to toe with Real Madrid. We just crumbled physically and had a few issues or whatever on the day, and I don't know whether Tottenham Hotspur in getting all that way. I don't think they ever felt as though like it was their rightful place. I always felt like, and I got it from some of the fans and whatever, like they felt like, wow, what a great time, what a great opportunity. Isn't it brilliant for us to be here? But I never got a sense like they felt it was destiny to win it or whatever. And then
we got there the same way though, didn't we? We both battled against the odds. Their win against Ajax was fantastic. Yeah. I remember watching it thinking, oh my God, this is amazing. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't amazing because then it's an all-English final. Mm-hmm. But I remember thinking, okay, I'm a bit worried here, because Spurs could just go, right, we've got this mentality, it's ours, the same way we did, and that's why I was made up. Liverpool came out.
The difference between the squads, though, and it was referenced, like, the life cycle of a squad, you know, I always go back to this, that so much of that team was Tottenham's first choice team, Jack, when Jurgen Klopp took his first game in charge of Liverpool. You know, there's a lot of that team still there, and I wonder whether that's what's kind of happened to them. And I think they'll come back strong. They'll give us a bloody good game at the weekend, and I think they will finish top four without a doubt, and they'll probably surprise some people along the way who think they're dead. But the issue they've kind of had is that they've brought this squad up. They've probably reached the peak of their powers. Come against Liverpool. Had Liverpool not really break a massive sweat in winning the final, you know, albeit we got a bit lucky with the penalty.
It was very sticky,
on.
It was very hot. Yeah. Did break a sweat in that.
Literally, but metaphorically. And whether they've just kind of gone, well, this is as good as we are. And that's they've re-seen the levels. You know, it's like a champion boxer getting up there, going through all the training, and you just step into the ring against someone who's just a superior athlete or whatever. Mm. And how do you, when you've realised you'll never be there, how do you pick yourself up again?
I think they've been damaged by a lot of media pressure as well. Mm. I think obviously after the Champions League final, they've spent a lot of money. And Ndombele cost a lot. Obviously, they had to get Lo Celso on loan to feed into financial fair play because they spent a lot of cash in the summer. They've had all this thing with Eriksen and Vertonghen and whatever's going on there. They've always got Pochettino leaving, always linked to Real, always linked to Man United. I think it's one of them where, like you say, I think people are looking at this Tottenham side and they have world-class players who are going to want to win trophies, and yeah. they're in the sort of situation that we were in a few years ago where we've got world-class players who are saying, yeah, this is good, but I want more. Yeah. And at the minute for Tottenham, while they're still not winning stuff, they get knocked out the Carabao Cup to, I've forgotten who it is, Colchester, I think it is. Yeah. They're in the Champions League getting dicked by Bayern and stuff like that. And it's just, they're just one of them teams where you can't see where they're going to get their luck, do you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that I think was quite funny, just lastly on the Champions League final stuff, and this is the world that we're not kind of privy to because we kind of live in our own little bubble, you know, at times up in Liverpool. But when you live in London, you've got to live with rival fans constantly, not just one or two. It's not just living with Evertonians. Like, you know, it's like a food chain in London of like who, you know, who's at the top of it at any given point. And I love the notion that there's like Chelsea fans winding them up.
Yeah.
Because they won the Europa League and Spurs lost the Champions League final, whereas, I'll be perfectly honest, I'd rather lose a Champions League final than win a Europa League. It's just a sad state of affairs. But yeah, so yeah, I think they've had to live with more banter than most have over the summer. So I do have a degree of sympathy with Tottenham Hotspur fans. But as mentioned, I don't consider them rivals, and I find that really odd when I think about it. I got asked to do a video for Ball Street a couple of years ago, and it was like, talk about the rivalry, because I remember the Fighting Cock podcast put a graphic out about how many years they finished above us or something like that, get back in your hole, Liverpool fans, blah, blah, blah. And I remember thinking like, oh, wow, I never thought you had an opinion on us. When I ask to name the top teams, like, it's embarrassing how often I go, and someone goes, Tottenham, Paul. I go, Tottenham! You know, like, you know, because I don't like Chelsea. Can't stand Chelsea. I can't stand, obviously, United. I remember seeing us lose the title in 89 to Arsenal, so I've always got that kind of thing. And then City more recently. I always had a soft spot for City in the 90s because of Oasis and all that kind of stuff. But now I can't stand them because of recent rivalry. But Spurs, I don't have any antipathy.
This is probably why they hate us. Because when you think about it, because we're going, who? Yeah. And they're like, yeah. Hello? And we're just like, you know, well,
I'm your arch nemesis. Yeah. And you're like, sorry, who are you again? Yeah.
Rivalries are born out of success, aren't they, really? It's why, look, as much as we didn't want it, and I still don't really want it, us and City is sort. It's a rivalry now because we're battling for the top stuff. We're battling every time. And I don't remember really battling with Spurs every time. Yeah, we used to battle for top four.
We were
stuff
battling
like
against
that.
Our own ineptitude. They thought they were battling against us, and we were battling against us being shit.
Yeah.
And looking at ourselves going, like running a race and looking at you, we're looking at our legs going, why are you shit? Why aren't we faster? Why aren't we running better? And they're looking behind going, whoa, we're doing, in your face, Liverpool. I can't think
what Spurs have won in my lifetime. And then, like, since I've started watching footy.
League Cup in 2009, I think.
So then, like, that's what it is. I look at people, and rivalries are born out of jealousy and stuff like that. Arsenal, I remember seeing them and United battling it out constantly. And thinking, wow, these are two top sides. And Spurs had a great side. I don't want to downplay them at all. But the only time I can remember, really, is when they dropped off in the title race last season, I think it was, and in the Champions League final, or not the season before, sorry, and in the Champions League final, and you're thinking, that's the only time they've ever been in my consciousness.
I suppose it's a bit like the City rivalry in some respects, Jack, because I remember in 13-14, I loved the battle we had with Man City that season. I genuinely loved it. I really liked their team. I liked the manager. I liked loads about them, and they weren't. I didn't know enough. I hadn't seen enough of just. I mean, you've seen how weird Man City fans are online now. Mm. Now, but at the time, you didn't really see it. So I enjoyed it from a football rivalry. I thought this is going to be a really positive rivalry we'd have. And then we dropped off, and then we got rubbed in our faces for a bit. Okay, and then we come back, and it's gotten a bit. It's just a bit odd, our rivalry with them. It's a bit more from their side. I think it's a bit weirdly bitter and twisted. Yeah. But I could see it being like that a bit with Spurs. I think we've got a good football rivalry going with them, but nothing deeper.
It's one of them, isn't it, where Tottenham fans are always going to try and force a rivalry. Liverpool fans have this stereotype that we're easy to bite or we're easy to wind up or whatever. But I think, to be honest with you, as you say, I'm not bothered about Tottenham. They're just one of them teams where, actually, I wouldn't mind them winning the league to stop Chelsea, United, Arsenal. if we're not in the race, I wouldn't mind, because as long as those lot don't win it, Tottenham can have it all they want.
It was all those Arsenal fans who came out and like, we're going to support Liverpool on the fine, we're getting loads of abuse for this. And I just said, fuck off Arsenal, we don't want your support. Have a holiday. Just go and have a holiday, go and see your family, just leave it alone, don't watch the game. You know, we don't want your support, we're fine. And other people go, don't be so salty. I was like, I don't want Arsenal, I don't want Arsenal fans backing us anyway. So in that regard, you're right, I prefer, I'd much rather Spurs be successful than any of the other London clubs, because... Again, just fine, Arby. That might change if they get something at the weekend, to be fair. Tom, speaking of the weekend then, Jürgen Klopp's got some options. Now, we're recording this ahead of the press conference. We'll be doing I'll be doing the starting 11 prediction a little bit later on Friday, so I've got to clear the picture of things. We'll do preferred 11s in a little bit. But we've played ourselves into a position all of a sudden, and it's been a bit of a slow burn, and it might come too soon for Naby and Ox, given their exertions in midweek. But
players off the bench, Paul. You've got attacking midfielders off the bench.
Yeah.
And it's been a while where you can look at it and go, because there was always doubt. You can say, oh, you can bring Keita on, you can bring Oxlade-Chamberlain on, but are they going to affect football games? The answer now is yes. And you've also got Lallana in there. The answer now is yes, where you can rely, not rely on them, but in the same way as Divock Origi, when we were like, can we really rely on him? And he comes on and he makes an impact every time. And I love the fact now that I was looking at our top scorers, and Mane's on 9 in all comps, I'm pretty sure. Mane's on 9, Salah's on 7, Firmino's on 3, Milner's on 2. We're just getting goals from other places as well, in terms of Spurs have got Kane's on 10, who's firing away their top scorer, because they're just going for this focal point, and then there's Son, Lucas and Lamella who are helping as well. But I think I just really enjoy the fact
how
that
many goals have they scored? Just to see how well your point holds up.
They've scored, Son's 5, Lucas is 5, Lamella's 4. They've scored.
So, saying is...
I was just spotting numbers.
I'm just protecting you from the comments.
But what it is you can now have people who are joining the attack from midfield, which is what we've needed, in especially against United.
What it is we've got players there, because I think the Origi comparison is interesting, but I don't think Origi has a positive transformative effect on the side. I think Naby and Ox do. I think Lallana and Origi are both players who, for whom you can drop them in individually and you don't see a significant drop off. Your team can still perform, but Naby and Ox are completely different to the other players we've got. That's the first time I've been banging this drum all summer, and even like last season, we finally got to see Fabinho, Naby and Ox. There's a chance, Ben, that might be the midfield that Jürgen Klopp's wanted all along. And we're going on about this, our understanding of what Liverpool's midfield is. And he likes a functional midfield. He likes Jordan Henderson and Wijnaldum. He likes
the grafters.
He loves a grafter in midfield. Well, we don't know that, because he's never had that. This is the first time he's had the option of a fully fit of those two players that's throw in.
Yeah, definitely. I think, and we saw the evidence is there from the Man United game and even in the week as well. You know, the way, because we were just so lacking of ideas away at Old Trafford. And once he brought those players on who had just a little bit of extra creativity and a little bit of, you know, could maybe see passes that the likes of Jordan Henderson doesn't. And that's not a criticism of Jordan Henderson, but it's just what different players are good at. And you know, having come away from Man United, and you know, I was pretty much happy with that midfield in terms of the way it worked and the way it operated, but it left me wanting more post Man United when I saw those players. Obviously, we saw them in the week. Oxlade-Chamberlain gets 2 goals. I now feel like I'm ready for a freshening up of the midfield in the league sense as well. I think actually, personally, I think our best midfield is Fabinho, one of Henderson, Gini, one of Keita and Ox. I think that provides the best balance. Yeah. I think that's probably what we'll see at the weekend. Or that's what I'd like to see at the weekend, as we'll come to later. I think those players now, you know, suddenly you kind of forget about them, because obviously Ox in particular, you know, he was out for so long. Keita was only sort of fits and starts last season. You know, he had a good period sort of around, you know, February, March, April, where, you know, he was coming in for the quarterfinals of the Champions League and the Bayern game and stuff like that. But obviously then he gets injured as well, so he drops off again. And now suddenly, the more you see of them, the more you're reminded of what sort of talented players they are and how many options we suddenly have in the midfield. It's great. And Tom's smiling to himself because he knows
them,
right?
I absolutely love it. The Oxlade-Chamberlain stuff's interesting. So Anfield Index did something on the stats on Ox and what have you in his pressing game. Dan Kennett, our good friend and football analyst, wrote about it. This is huge for our season. Ox is an eight, is a phenom, which I love. I love that. It's up there with The Undertaker. No other player in our team offers the level of intensity, counter-pressing and power that he does, not even Bobby or Fab. Equivalent of 12.2 kilometres in a game, we have 76 possession, is lots and lots of fire emojis. For me, he's our best player without the ball by a long way and should be first name in the team sheet versus City in November. With him, we can repeat the poor performances of 17-18. No one in the City team can live with his physicality and intensity. And that's the thing. I think, Jack, there's going to be horses for courses, and that's the beauty of the squad that we've got. I don't expect us to play that midfield all the time, but there'll be different types of games. There'll be games when you're coming up against Man City. You're coming up against the best teams in the world, and they're going to put their best team in the world against our best team in the world. And the best team in the world will come out on top. There'll be teams where, like Man United, like, you know, your Burnleys of yours, your Stoke, all that kind of stuff, who are going to be defensive. They're going to park the bus, and you're going to need a super attacking team because you're just going to be charged with winning the game. And there'll be other games on the flip where you're going to need to be quite combative or what have you. And Ben's right. There'll be games when you can unleash that midfield three. There'll be games when you play one of them. And there'll be games when you absolutely need Genie and Henderson in there. But again, that bodes so well for us because, like I said, we've just not had that option. We haven't seen Klopp's final form team in full action yet, I don't think.
The season's 38 games long. That's just the Premier League. Then
dynamite inside, Jack. Let's go.
In the Champions League, you've got at least six. And it's just one of them where it's a different dynamic. Yeah. And me and Chris had this discussion a few weeks ago about the need of a creative midfielder.
Was it a discussion?
Debate,
it was a debate that Chris heavily won. But to be honest with you,
what was your point that we
my,
needed?
My
what,
point
more
was
midfielders.
That at times you need a creative midfielder. At times it seems as though we're lacking some creativity from the midfield.
You're 100% right in that argument.
I do believe I was right in that sense. However, I get what Chris is saying, and it comes from the point where we're not always based around our midfield needing to attack, needing to get goals from our midfield. A midfield of Henderson, Genie, Milner, although it's painful to watch at times, it's needed for the game. Now, what I love to see is when we do give Oxlade-Chamberlain a run, because last season, where my opinion of where we fell was in games like United away, Everton away, and Leicester. Mm-hmm. And then I feel as though the problem was lacking a creative midfielder, which now we've got Naby and Oxlade-Chamberlain back in good form.
Yeah.
This is perfect for
look
me.
Look, we just had no one last season, really. We had a couple of examples of when Henderson stepped up at the back end of the season. I think he offered a bit more of this. The Oxlade-Chamberlain goals against City two seasons ago in the league and in the Champions League, we had no one doing that for us. So you're right. Yeah. I think the problem is when people say creative midfielder, they have this vision of, I think, like a number 10.
It's Coutinho.
Someone in his, or you know, I referenced Pablo Aimar for some reason on the post-match show the other day, which of course people of a certain age, old school footy manager, chap manager, players will get that reference. But, you know, that's it. You're tricky, lightweight, but, you know, gets loads of assists and scores well. And he's... But you need to do more in Liverpool's midfield. But you're right; those players, they just play between the lines a bit more. They break a bit more. He's faster. They dribble with it. Wijnaldum can do that, but I think there's a limit to what he can do in our team. And same with Henderson, Oxlade-Chamberlain, and slightly, you know, probably slightly deeper than that, Naby Keita. They're a level up. And so you're right. There's games where, and Chris is right in so much as for the way that Liverpool's best current team plays.
Yeah.
The creativity comes from the wide positions, it comes from Trent and it comes from Andy Robertson, which is why they get so many assists. But there will come a game every now and again, or maybe more often than not, as teams look to try and nullify us, where you're just banging on the door, and we've seen it. We got lucky-ish against Arsenal, because that game was going exactly the same way. It was a good ball into the box, and it's a set piece, isn't it, that we finally break them down. But there's going to be games where you're going to need other ways of doing it, and that's where Oxlade-Chamberlain plays.
That's where I think Klopp got it perfect against United, because, you know, when do we see Klopp actually making an early substitution? But he bought, was it Ox on after 60 minutes?
60 minutes,
and it was just like he knew that we needed a creative player in that game. Where I feel as though it's coming is obviously with Naby Keita going into that game against Genk. Everyone's eyes was on him going, oh, this is when we're going to unleash Keita. Everyone forgot about Oxlade-Chamberlain being in the lineup.
Well, Ox showed us, didn't he? You know, you can caveat it, Tom, with it being Genk all we want. I mean, that's fine to say, like, you know, not necessarily the best team we're going to face this season by any stretch, although I was impressed by them. Like, yeah. But what he did, he scored two boss goals from positions of the pitch where we don't score goals.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I think the thing is with Oxlade-Chamberlain, you're talking about we're changing our midfield because we can't get any joy out of the flanks. When we played against Genk, Oxlade-Chamberlain was doing the Coutinho role in terms of scoring from outside the box. It didn't nullify our wing play at all. James Milner was still getting up the side of the pitch. Andy Robertson was still playing well on that left-hand side, linking with Naby Keita. So it's the best of both worlds when Oxlade-Chamberlain's on the pitch and when we get our tactics spot on, which we did against Genk. And I really love that in prospect. Is having, we've spoke how many times about we've got so many options in attack. We've got our fullbacks racing on. We've got our wingers tucking in, but can also get to the byline. We've got Bobby Firmino. He does magical things in the midfield, in the middle of the park. Sorry to link it all up. And now we've got these attacking midfielders in prospect who can come in, and when Bobby Firmino wants to drop deep and wants to link up play and it's getting a bit tight in the midfield, Oxlade-Chamberlain just has a shot. Yeah. You've seen Gini Wijnaldum even had a few shots every now and then. Naby Keita had a go at it, and it's creating so many more dangerous situations. It frees up so many more players that are usually double marked.
The teams defend, it's so compact in the middle of the defence, because that's what you do. You're protecting your 18-yard box effectively. So we play wide to try and stretch things out, but so often not. You get into a routine, and we've seen it, saw this happening in Sheffield United, happening in Manchester United as well, Ben, where you're just repeating the same process, and then you're ending up in a situation where you're lumping the ball into the box and you're asking Firmino, Mane, Salah to try and beat these 6 or 4 centre-halves in the air. The balls are going to be perfect in that regard, and we're better than most at doing that, so we've still got that as an Arsenal. But every now and again, just having someone you need in that instance where it's so tight in front of goal, down the middle of the park, you need brilliant technicians as well. You need lads who's just touches tighter, it's quicker, they move the ball, and having an eye for goal as well, you know, so all of a sudden you're set. Liverpool are going to play that wide. We play the ball into the midfield, well, you know they're just going to shift it out to the other side. Then all of a sudden, Ox just hits it.
First time, outside of his boot onto the top of the crossbar and in,
But that's it, and you know, look, he's not going to score with every shot.
and you ask more questions.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to end up in the Coutinho situation where you're having 50 shots a game and you're doing fuck all because you need to have this process. But it, again, it strings to the bow that we haven't had.
Discovering that, and you know, we touched on it. You touched on it just then. You know, that Genk is Genk again, but at the same time, you know, last season the Red Star home game was a big game for Fabinho, where he came in and he was absolutely outstanding, and it was all dressed up. Well, it was only Red Star and all that. But these are the games where Keita and Oxlade-Chamberlain will now be sat down, shown their performance back, and you're going, this is what you're doing. This you're doing this right, and you're doing all these things correctly, and they can build on that. And these are the type of games where, when you do play well, that gives you confidence. You're told exactly what you're doing. You're told where to improve, and you take that then into the bigger games, such as this one.
And absolutely. You know what as well? For ages we've been saying about the fact what's different between us and City. Obviously, City blow away teams, we don't. Then, with that midfield, I think we're fully capable of blowing away teams. Mm-hmm. When you talk about the teams at the lower end of the league, I really feel like there is so much creativity with that in that team. When you put Trent in as well and Robbo on the left, there's just so much creativity that we will be able to blow away teams.
We talk a lot of times, another old wrestling reference, but like, if the left one don't get you, then the right one will, or the middle one. Or the guy just behind the middle one, or the guy just left, just next to him, or the guy's out wide. You're just adding more ways in which we can hurt you. And there's only so much when you teams at certain levels. There's only so much they can do. Yeah. You mean there's only so much of that you can cover. So no, very, very exciting indeed. We're going to talk about whether these lads actually get into our preferred 11s in a moment. But first, we did the Reds News Roundup show this week with Mr. Stehor. It was an absolute belter. Take a look and listen to this.
I sometimes wonder whether Jurgen Klopp looks at Raheem Sterling and as a bit of a shame that those guys never cross paths. And you know, obviously they're both English, they're both young players, they're both great talents. And wonder whether, you know, if he buys somebody like Jadon Sancho, can he mould him and develop him into a top? Because look, there's no arguing that Raheem Sterling's really kicked on under a top manager at Manchester City. You know, I don't know who's in charge at Dortmund now, but you know, if imagine somebody like Sancho under one of the best managers in the world. What I've seen of Sancho so far, like, I'm not completely convinced he's going to be worth 100, 125 million, but nobody thought Raheem Sterling was going to be worth 49 at the time. Inflation in the market means that we're probably looking at fees similar to what you would have been paying. So if you buy Sancho now for 120 million quid and he ends up at the levels that Sterling's at, you go, well, that's right now, you go, well, that's good value for money.
Well, that's what we've got to do. I've said this for years. we've built now. And what you do is you do what Barcelona have been doing. The Barcelona model is
just top it off.
You just top it off. Every now and again, every couple of seasons, you go and buy a massive player who's brilliant. You go and buy one of the best in the world, you know, and then you have the best years of them at your club, and then you fill the rest of your squad out with hopefully some very talented young lads who are coming through. And a lot of this will depend upon winning a Premier League title or whatever, or continue to win Champions League, just so you're making sure that the lads who are in there have got those experiences to pass around the squad. But for me, yes, look, Sancho's on that list, isn't he, of the lads that I think I'm just reading the tea leaves and all that kind of stuff. Like, I have a very strong feeling that they're probably going to go big for someone in the summer. I keep hearing the Mbappe stuff. It's never going to be Mbappe. But Sancho does fit the mark. He's English as well, which I think is a big thing, and shouldn't be underestimated that we're going to need as many English players as possible.
Yeah, there you go. You can get that full show on the redmentv.com. It's completely free for the first month, so if you want that. We do wrap up the big, interesting Liverpool news stories each and every week, as well as the midweek final word, because obviously you'll see now Monday final word is out, is replacing the podcast. But if you like that show, that's there for the Champions League games, the League Cup games, etc., in the midweek, as well as the instant match reaction, which this week had Alan Kennedy on us in a bar in town, which was an absolute belter. Chris's Stats and Tactics Show. There's a whole host of absolutely amazing content and exclusive interviews with the Liverpool manager, Liverpool players past and present as well, and on the website. So yeah, you can go over and check all that stuff out. Anyway, preferred 11s. Jack, have you got anything interesting, anything out of the ordinary going for you?
Well, I've got Robbo to start. I think he'll be fit for it. Mm-hmm. I think.
I mean, all being fit, are you going back? Everyone going back with the
back five.
The back five. Yeah. Matic back in. No. Oh no.
Gomez comes in.
Okay.
And it depends how, it obviously depends how Spurs set up. I had a look. The last five games, they played a 4-2-3-1. Then before that, 3-4-2-1. Before that, they played a 4-2-3-1 again. Then a 4-1-2-1-2, and then a 4-2-3-1. So they're changing pretty regularly, yeah, which is mad. So we don't know how they're going to set up, but they have some pace. They have some pace up top. Mm-hmm. If they play Lucas and Son, which I'm sort of half expecting, I don't know why Lucas didn't play last time, but it's what if that happens. Joe Gomez's pace is going to be invaluable. And look, as good as Joe Matip is, and he is fantastic, I think Joe Gomez can more than withstand it, and I want to see him play. I really do want to see him play centre-half.
I know these are our preferred 11s, but I do wonder whether the reason Joe Gomez didn't play in the week is because Matip isn't going to be fit.
That's a good point.
I think because yeah. I don't see... I'd have just assumed that he would have just dropped go. And to be fair, you know, for the fact that he didn't play at all as well, you know, because yeah, he would have played right back if Trent wasn't there. He could have played centre-back, but he didn't play at all. So I'm thinking he doesn't want to play Lovren. So he brought Gomez on for half an hour or however long he got, and I get the feeling. I mean, I would prefer to see Matip in personally, just because of how well he's playing. But I get the feeling that it's going to be Robbo, Virgil, Gomez, Trent.
We were sat here prior to the game, and I think it was right at the end, and I threw it in like Lovren, anyone? And we're like, oh. I mean, Lovren isn't he? I think you know what you're going to get. You're going to largely get fantastically committed performances and the occasional brain fart. Tottenham Hotspur and Lovren fills me with a cold dread.
No.
So I get the Gomez stuff's a potentially interesting
show. He is good enough, and it depends about Trent. I know he was ill, wasn't he, the other day. Maybe then you put Gomez on the right hand side and you do put a Joe Matip in if he's back. Yeah. If not, Lovren comes in there. That's the best thing about Gomez, he's versatile.
Well, the best thing about Lovren in some regards, isn't it, is that like none of us would have him in our best 11s, or none of us would choose to have Lovren in, which is a bit unfair, really. Yeah. But he's never going to... He doesn't deliberately make mistakes. He's perfectly capable of coming, which against Leicester. Comes into that game, Jack.
The best thing about that as well is, obviously, when Klopp first came, it was when Van Dijk first came as well, it was very much Lovren and Van Dijk. And we haven't gone out and bought anyone new. We've just used the centre-backs we've got and coached them to be better. And now Lovren's fallen behind. And it's like you said a few weeks ago, Paul, that you deem Lovren as probably one of the worst players in the squad. And that's saying a lot. He's been a Champions League winner. He's been a World Cup finalist. Yeah. It's one of them, isn't it?
Absolutely. Midfield then, has anyone gone for being your Naby Oxegaard?
No,
I agree on that. I think... Henderson?
Yeah.
Henderson, Fabinho, Keita.
You think Keita comes in?
Yeah. I think you have to start Ox. I think what Ox has been asking for recently is that he wants regular game time, so it can make him fitter again. And I think it's perfect for him. How can you drop him after that performance?
I don't know if you play him, because Henderson and Ox have both played on that right-hand side. That's the only issue. And we're talking about how good Chamberlain and Keita are. And look, that midfield of Fabinho, Henderson, Gini is also fantastic. And the reason why Henderson's fantastic on the right hand side, yes, he plays in a little bit differently to Chamberlain, and we're speaking about how it doesn't disrupt the game on the right hand side and the left hand side when Ox comes in. But I love seeing Henderson going past. When he's in full flow and he's linking up with Trent and Salah on that right hand side, he is fantastic. So I think we need that workhorse as well. We can't underestimate Spurs on the counter. We really can't.
My feeling, because I was talking to someone about this the other day, and I said, how do you not play Ox? How do you know he has only played the hour? How do you turn around to having scored however long he played, a bit longer, didn't he? But either way, he scored two goals. He's finally in form. He's finally fit. How do you turn around to Oxlade-Chamberlain so you're not starting this game? And I say, well, mate, he's still coming back. Jordan Henderson's had a full week off now. He's ready. He needs a big performance, to be honest. I think his form started to tail off a little bit. But I think he loves the challenge. He loves the kick up the arse as well. And I agree. Look at the Spurs game. We were much better than Spurs last season. They changed formation. They kind of get themselves back into it. And I know we needed that thing at the end. But for me, I'm turning around to Ox and going, right, lad, you're first sub. You're coming on at an hour. If this game's going our way, you'll come on. If this game's not going our way, you're going to come on as well. And I want you to have this impact at this level coming off the bench. Because I think the issue we've sort of got for now is that I think it's Henderson or Ox, and I think it's Wijnaldum or Naby in terms of the positions in a 4-3-3.
It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Yeah. They're all brilliant. And they walk into so many sides. And the thing is, Keita I would love to see Keita play, but again, I'm perfectly fine. I want to see Fabinho, Hendo, Gini.
Yeah.
As much as it, that's what battles.
Yeah.
That's what gets in there. And you're coming up against some top midfielders there against Spurs as well. Put it, get in tight, get the press on.
I think the midfield battles are important in this game because I think where you look at Tottenham at the minute, I think with their defence is very weak. I think their midfield has also been weak recently and it looks unbalanced. And the midfield battle could be very important. So for that, I do like the argument of Fabinho, Wijnaldum and obviously Henderson. But I just think that if, like it's like you said, how do you say to Oxlade-Chamberlain you can't play this game? And for me, I had down here put Wijnaldum and Oxlade-Chamberlain in the midfield because for me, that can get at Tottenham, exploit their weaknesses, which is their in the midfield and the defence, and just give them a game.
I get the feeling Henderson's nailed onto plays at least. I just think because of the amount of work he puts in, and Chamberlain does it, and Gini does it, but I think the amount of ground Henderson covers, I think, in a big game like this, I think Klopp fans really key.
Yeah, and let's not forget, again, there's going to be a situation where you're not making the team more attacking. If you let's say you start with that midfield, you've got Wijnaldum and Henderson on the bench. You bring different things. Look, we saw Henderson and Milner change the game away at Southampton last season, so caveat what I'm saying with that touch. But I think there's something to having those extra depths to go to because we don't have another true, you know, it goes back to Origi on the bench, fine, you know, but we don't have another like world class forward to bring on. So if you want to go a bit deeper, spit, this could be a game where it's 0-0 with 10 minutes to go, with 15 minutes to go. You want game changers. You want to be able to go up a gear. I think we're going to see a lot more of that, of like Liverpool making it 20-minute, 30-minute matches in these situations where you tie them out with all the running, the pressing and all that kind of stuff, and then you bring these finesse players on and just go, poof. We saw it, the Charity Shield against Man City when we absolutely went for that game and we saw it at Old Trafford, and then we started it against Genk. That's where my sort of feelings are.
I love how we're not even speaking about Fabinho not playing, by the way. Like, there could be an argument that Gini comes and sits in six because he can do it.
Yeah.
Could be an argument that Hendo drops in, which probably won't happen. But just the fact that he's now, he allows everything else to happen. I think we spoke about it at post-Genk and we were saying, we literally left, I think it was James Sutton saying, we literally left three people at the back four with the goalkeeper and just went, there you go, because we trust implicitly in that. We've got a spine of players that are world class, and I mean, it could be a case Fabinho might need a rest. He's played a lot of football.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be adverse to seeing Gini Wijnaldum in the six with a Naby Keita and a Henderson there.
Well, yeah.
I think that's got good
and
balance
you
as
you mentioned
well.
It, and you know, I think we've seen it, maybe, probably not this game, because I think you want Fabinho in your big games, because he's your big game player in that regard. But in terms of freshening up, that could be a solution to get. How do you get Ox and Naby into the team? Do you drop Henderson back into the six for this one or Wijnaldum? Yeah. We'll see all these midfields at some point.
Could even go to a two.
You've got the Arsenal Cup game next week. You know, it's definitely going to be freshened up. I'd be surprised if Fabinho plays there.
The point for me is that Dan Kerrett made that was spot on. Is that I think you're engineering a situation to the best of your ability where you're absolute 100% A star grade team is available for that Man City game at Anfield. And so whether that means, does that mean that Oxlade-Chamberlain is,
but what
you,
is
do
that?
You keep him?
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. We don't know what that is at this point. It's probably the midfield.
It's definitely one of Naby and Ox, almost certainly Ox, I think, in the midfield in that game.
The genie on the left. And that's the thing. And then I guess you can kind of switch it in and make it a two when you need to be like more defensive in that sense.
Yeah.
I love this fact that we were speaking about. I remember pre-season, everyone's going, oh, we need to sign people. And Klopp was like, no, I've got the players at my disposal. I'm just going to use them. And we were all saying, every single one of us was saying, no, we need this, we need this. And obviously there's question marks about the front three and who comes in, because there is a bit of a drop-off just because they're so world-class.
Yeah.
Origi, he's very good. He's not that like top echelon.
Yeah.
But we're bearing the fruits
of it now. Nobody cry asked at Barcelona when they went, hang on a second, back in the day, Neymar, Suarez and Messi, well, who's underneath them? No one went, well, there's a significant drop-off in quality, but because, of course there is.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, they're so
is, yeah.
good. Well, your world-class is world-class. But I think one thing, if you could tell, one uniform thing that we know about how Klopp uses a squad is that he doesn't rotate the front three, he rotates the midfield. Yeah. And we've not been able to rotate the midfield because with the players that we've got, the players there haven't been fit. And, and so we've had to get them up to speed. And, you know, we do finally have those options mercifully.
The amazing thing as well about this is we haven't spoke about Lallana once during this whole conversation. Yeah. He scored for us last week. He'll be boosted by that as well. And we have another player on the bench there that, yeah, is there's a severe difference in quality between the likes of him, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Keita and him, in my opinion. But he's still a good player, and he still showed on Sunday that he can be important for us. And like, I remember Daniel Sturridge last season, he didn't really do much for us last season. But the one thing you'll remember of Daniel Sturridge last season was that curled strike against Chelsea, where he got us a point, which was massive for us. And it was just
these lads have all got a role to play, and I think it's we get sucked into this notion of a best 11. I think at times, I know I was brought up for the City game. Couple know what is, you know, for me your best 11 is dependent on your opponents. Mm. But you know, I guess the true argument is when you come up against the best team you can possibly face, and you want to go have a bit of a slugfest with them, who's in that team. But you're right, we don't play Man City every week. Yeah. You've got to find different ways of beating things, and we finally seem to have that capability. Right, let me know your preferred 11s in the comment section underneath. Let's have some... Oh, in fact, actually, we'll have score predictions in a second. I'll just highlight a couple of rival fixtures. I brought Leicester-Southampton in because I've got this real feeling that Southampton are going to do Leicester on Friday on Friday night. You look at, like, there's a reason why teams that are challenged for top four don't challenge beyond is because they go away to Southampton and lose these kind of games.
Is it at Leicester or Southampton?
It's at Leicester, but they play against those kind of teams. The pure Brendan Rodgers Achilles heel is old Southampton.
Leicester go second as well if they win.
Mm-hmm. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'd love that pressure on Man City.
Yeah,
I'd love Brendan to put the pressure on there on City. That'd be incredible.
Like the olden days, but like Liverpool. Yeah,
Man City face Aston Villa the early kickoff on Saturday.
Villa win that, Paul. All day Villa win that.
They're a good side for that. You obviously, you fancy Man City because they're at home, and it's, you know, they do. But Dean Smith has them organised. You know, if they can just hold on in there, like
bang a couple of worldies in McGinn. From 40 yards.
Yeah. I was thinking that as well, and then I watched his press conference on Sky Sports News yesterday, and it came up. The only way to stop Raheem Sterling is by tying his shoelaces together. So if that's his plan, then
go for it. You know, whatever it takes, whatever it takes. Right, cool. Score predictions then, Jack. What do you think?
3-1.
Ben.
I don't know. 3-1. Yeah.
Clean sheet all day. 2-0.
Okay. I'll go 2-1, but I think rather than it being their defence chucking one in for us, I think it'll go quite similar to last time, but we'll just go on and we'll score the second goal properly.
Champions League final all over again. Nice little 2-0. Mane hit it at a player's arm.
Nice little 2-0. Just belittle the biggest game in Europe.
It's another example. We talk about this all the time. We did this all last season. We'll do it all this season, undoubtedly. But because the Man City players will be safely tucked up with their 3 points from the early Saturday, they're all going to be watching this. It would be nice for us to not break a sweat because they'll have been so buoyed by the Man United game last week. I don't want that again. You're right, if you can just go out there and just be...
The clean sheet's massive for me, Paul. Yeah. It's massive. Yeah. We haven't had a clean sheet for ages, and Alisson was fuming the other day. It shouldn't have been allowed to happen, that Ghent goal. Yeah. And our defence is good enough. I don't know why we're conceding these goals. We need to snuff that out.
Yeah.
It's not affecting us too much, but we used to win games 1-0, and we used to praise our defence like that. Yeah. You've got to go out there and make a stand. Even if it's a 1-0, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Keep your defence tight. Show this. It is a very... They've scored 15 goals in the league. They score goals. You've got to shut them down for me.
Absolutely. So, yeah, let us know your score predictions and your preferred 11s in the comments below. Check back for the start and 11 prediction show, which I'm going to somehow manage to cobble together. Pick a midfield for that one. Gents, that's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for watching, liking, sharing and subscribing. And we'll be back post-match.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.